Welcome to the X-Men Task Podcast. My name is Willie Simpson.
My name is Sonia Rappaport.
And today, Sonia, we are on the third episode of Season 5, the 67th episode overall, A Deal with the Devil, another Omega Red adventure.
Mm-hmm. The proverbial devil.
Right. And he is quite devilish in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I'll have to say off the bat, surprised that this is like prime X-Men quality.
Yeah.
We have yet to descend into the bad animation studio with the worst voice acting. And
I know, we've been so excited for that for so long.
Yeah, I want the bad episodes. This is just another really good one. This episode written by former X-Men Task Podcast guest Eric Lewald, one of the main executive producers and story editors of the show.
Mm-hmm.
This is one that he gets sole writing credit for. Pretty cool. And it's a really great episode. Very oddly prescient and topical. Very of its time, too.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's dealing with a lot of like post-Cold War Russia breakup politics.
Yeah.
That were common in the mid-90s, I suppose.
How do you like Omega Red as a villain?
I think he's actually really cool.
Uh-huh.
And I can see him being used amazingly in a movie one day. It's a villain they haven't even...
A modern movie?
Yes.
Hmm.
You know, I think it just came out that... I think in Deadpool 2, Omega Red was in a deleted scene.
Yeah.
He was one of the prisoners at that mutant camp.
Oh, that's funny.
The mutant prison that Deadpool's part of with Juggernaut.
Yeah.
And I saw a screenshot of the actor that was supposed to play the extra, and it was... It wasn't that far off from the comic book of depiction of Omega Red. Like, we all know what Omega Red looks like. He's white-skinned with red eyeballs, and he's got that weird, like, white-yellow hair.
Top ponytail.
Yeah.
Half-ponytail style going on.
His white and red, like, Soviet body armor.
And the glowing red eyes.
Yeah, and the tentacles. In the screen grab I saw, it was just, like, some, like, weirdly colored... white guy, I guess, but not white skin colored like Omega Red. A regular white guy, but he had like a weird orangey tint to his skin. I don't know what was going on, but he seemed to have the hairstyle and the eyes, not glowing red eyes, but just like the face. So I was like,
wow.
I don't
really know what you mean now, but...
I know. You just look up the picture, everybody. You'll be able to see what I'm talking about.
I wonder if they didn't want him in the movie as just like an extra, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
In case later on he becomes a bigger character. And then they'd be sorry that they didn't just cast someone to play Omega Red in all the Marvel movies.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, the fun thing about Deadpool is that they've taken a few characters that otherwise have been a bit more serious in the Marvel comics and made jokes out of them,
yeah.
Like Colossus.
Colossus is the classic
one,
and
then the new one, Juggernaut, they made him more... I mean, Juggernaut's always been very cartoonish. But they really exaggerated him in the new movie.
Yeah.
So, you know, if they were going to do Omega Red, you'd think they'd probably do something similar. He'd be cursing, and he would be ridiculous and over the top. Which, in some sense, that might be the way to do him. But in another sense, you could do a Wolverine movie where he's just a really cool... It's like one of Wolverine's flashback stories to the Cold War when he was a Canadian agent
or
something.
I feel like that's how it would have to be. Because I was going to say, I think for the time, Omega Red is a great villain.
Yeah.
But by now, the Cold War is so far in the past that it's...
But is it now?
Well, yeah, right. But... the popularity of villains that tied directly in with the Cold War, like, hasn't really come back with the like current issues.
Well, that's
that are going on. You know,
I think that like the times are calling for a new Russian villain, perhaps in superhero movies. So Omega Red might be a good choice, and he's much like Captain America in the sense that he's, you know, frozen at times and thawed out and emerges in a world where the Soviet Union has been defeated. And he's got a lot of axes to grind. And I don't know. I kind of like... I have this dream of seeing if Marvel... And by the way, on today when we're recording this, the Fox shareholders approved the Disney buyout. So
mm-hmm.
It just looks like that's totally happening.
Yeah.
The X-Men are joining the MCU. So anyway, so a solo Wolverine movie where you get flashbacks to his past. My thing that I always wanted to see, and which we'll see in season 5 of this cartoon, is the Captain America Wolverine team up
mm-hmm.
from World War II, which would be amazing. just a great pairing of heroes, the ultimate American with the ultimate Canadian. But but and then, you know, Wolverine's his past goes like back to the Civil War, so you could do like anything from the last 150 years, but do a Cold War movie too, where Omega Red is the main villain. That'd be really awesome.
All I'm saying is that Omega Red ties in so closely with the Soviet Union and the Cold War and like American attitudes about like the Soviet Union and Russia at that time that I think I would enjoy it as like a historical sort of fiction, but maybe not in any other context.
Well, how about this context? Let me write this Wolverine movie. So half of it takes place as a flashback.
Uh-huh.
Where Wolverine's remembering the 1950s or 60s, where he fought Omega Red, maybe where Sabretooth was his, you know, his ally, and Maverick and Silver Fox, whoever his team was, and you know, Omega Red killed half of them, or something happened, and then he's frozen. Wolverine stopped him then, but now it's the present day too, and we see Wolverine having to fight him in the modern day too. So it's like you get a half movie.
I just don't think the character is going to age well.
But that's part of the... It's like Captain America. It's like, did he? Does he age well? He's a jingoistic, you know, World War II American patriotic propaganda character.
But that's like... It feels okay to make fun of him, which they do in the Marvel movies, because he's American being made fun of by Americans.
I mean, he's not really being made fun of.
They make it jokey.
Okay, at times, yeah.
At times, right?
But they don't outright say what a dope Captain America is. He's taken seriously as a character.
Yeah. Not, I'm not saying that he's... I didn't say dopey. I said jokey.
Right, yeah.
Like, they make allusions to it being a little bit over-the-top patriotic, like, throughout the movies where they use him. So, anyway, to me, like, it seems like that's fine because he's American and he's being made fun of by an American society and enterprise, whereas... When you take, like, a Soviet character, and the Soviet Union doesn't exist anymore, so that's kind of dated, and then... Mm-hmm. So what is this character? Russian? And then, like, all these Americans...
Well, no, he's Soviet. Like, I mean, that's what we see in this episode, too, that he's... The Cold War has ended.
Right.
The Soviet Union is dissolved, but not for Omega Red.
Right.
He can't let it go. And I think that's a good... I actually think that's an interesting character and would be for a modern-day movie, too, as, like, a modern-day villain.
Yeah.
That I could see that working. But whatever.
We're probably not going to see any of this come to fruition anyway.
I think we will. I think Omega Red's a good... You asked me a really good question. Is Omega Red a good villain? I think he really is awesome. I like his tentacles.
Uh-huh.
I think he's really fierce and, like, unstoppable and scary, and he's got a demented personality.
We might have touched on this last time we saw Omega Red. Those tentacles are robotic. Like Dr. Octopus in Spider-Man.
Yeah, carbonium or something, or carbonium. So, I forget what it's called.
But he's a mutant, so it's not that they're part of him. It's that his mutant power somehow enables him to have and control.
We looked it up the last time. I
can't remember.
I forget what the deal with Omega Red is. He was experimenting on, I think, much like Captain America.
Oh, okay.
He was one of these weapon projects, but a Soviet version.
Right.
For instance, like, Captain America was Weapon 1, Wolverine was Weapon X, which is Weapon 10. So it's like there's a, you know, a sequence of these things.
Got it.
But so Omega Red's on some Soviet side. So I forget what the deal with Omega Red was. He was like a street criminal with a violent personality that they captured and they turned him into a weapon. They might have mutated him. They might have turned him into a mutant. They did some kind of... They messed with his DNA.
I'll have to go back and listen to our own episode.
Right.
Just
look it up on Wikipedia.
Again, yeah.
But anyway, so he's... You know, there's something weird about Omega Red. He's not quite your, like, everyday mutant. And that's an interesting pivot because... He's promised in this episode that they're going to turn him back into a human if he helps the U.S. government in a twist.
Right.
So this episode two, speaking of Captain America, plays on the Captain America story in an interesting way.
Mm-hmm.
It's revealed later that the U.S. government is digging up Omega Red out of a frozen tundra in what they describe as the Caucasus Mountains, right?
Mm-hmm.
In the former USSR. I like how then they're not just saying Russia or some new country. They're saying the former Soviet Union. That's kind of an interesting twist. I feel like you might have seen that in other media at the time, too, when they were showing events going on in the former Soviet Union. They wouldn't say what would be a country, like Estonia or something that Kazakhstan got liberated. Yeah,
or
right.
Turkmenistan or something.
Yeah, so they wouldn't say Turkmenistan. They would say former Soviet Union, yeah. You know, whatever mountains. So it's the same thing here. And, you know, I presumably left frozen there by storm the last time we saw her.
Right.
Deal. I mean, she froze him, and that's how they stopped him. So, but it seems like the location from wherever that was changed, because that was in the middle of some village. They were fighting a war. Now it looks like he's in the middle of nowhere, so who knows what happened. Let's just presume that the X-Men, you know, it's continuity from that last time we saw Mega Red. Anyway, so like I said, parallels with the Captain America story. He's frozen, and he's being thawed out in a different time. The U.S. military captures him. Some, you know, colonel, or some, like a CIA colonel, I think, or some Navy, secret intelligence Navy colonel. He wants Omega Red to break into a sunken Russian nuclear sub off the coast of Hawaii. They say 120 miles away from Pearl Harbor because it's flooded with radioactive gas, and he'd be the only one who could survive it. And also, he knows all the access codes to the Russian submarine. So that,
how convenient.
Right, so... You know, when I was watching this, you know, I'd seen this episode once before years ago, but, you know, now basically with fresh eyes, I was curious. I thought, like, does this colonel want the sub for some nefarious purpose? You know, uh-huh. Like, is this a trick or a trap? But no, it's like it really is straightforward. Like, they just want to get rid of the sub.
Uh-huh.
But, and there's also, they mentioned there's 15 armed nuclear missiles that are still operational in the thing. I still don't know why they would need, like, a deranged, dangerous mutant like Omega Red to go down there and get the submarine and to program it. I guess because he knows the access codes.
That seems to be the main thing, but he's the only one on Earth that knows the access codes.
Like, why can't they just either... Why can't they scuttle the sub somehow? Or, like, use a crane and drag it away? Or get any other superhero in the Marvel Universe to just lift it, you know? Like, give Rogue a... We see Rogue later in this episode deal with the sub, but give her a underwater outfit and just have her lift it away and take it somewhere.
Uh-huh.
I'm not quite...
Let it detonate out in space somewhere where it's not going to hurt anybody.
I'm not quite sure what the point of this plan is at all.
They really feel like they got it figured out, though, this colonel.
It's crazy. It's so stupid, actually. I mean, this episode's really good, but their plan is stupid. And so they, like I said, they kidnapped Omega Red, and they said, listen, like, you're going to help us, and the payback, like we said, is we're going to give you your humanity back. We figured out a way to do that. And Omega Red doesn't really believe them, and they're like, no, medical science is really advanced. And then Omega Red's like, why should I trust you, imperialists? And I just like the dismissiveness of the U.S. colonel. He's like, that war's over. We've won. And it's like, you're an idiot for thinking.
Yeah.
It's funny, like, looking back at it, I really remember in the 90s that there was this total victorious attitude by the American political establishment that permeated through pop culture and society at large, that America just, like, Russia was a joke in the end. They crumbled, you know, it was like a crappy country.
The USSR.
Yeah, the USSR. There's nothing, like... no threat from them anymore, really.
Right.
Boris Yeltsin's the president, and he's like a drunken buffoon. And, you know, America's great.
America was really conceited and felt like they really won the Cold War.
The Cold War's over. And then 9/11 happens, and, like, okay. And there's so much criticism. It's like everyone at the FBI and CIA was still geared towards Cold War attitudes, even though it's long over. Uh-huh. And that's why we got surprised by terrorism, you know, or whatever, like, Al-Qaeda was. And they're like, so we had to, like, retrain, you know, we weren't even hiring people at CIA who could speak, Arabic or Farsi or whatever the languages the terrorists were speaking. It's like we had to really transform. But now, in the year 2018, the Russians are ascendant, at least in terms of, like, America's number one, like, political destabilizing threat again.
Right.
And they've, like, gone to, like, bonkers cartoon level of the things they've been accused of doing.
Yeah.
And that, you know, what's going on with our so-called compromised president, not to get too political.
Right.
But, like, now it's, like, insane. Like, the Cold War is, like, never went away. And we've got this, like, supervillain in Putin out there you know, running the show, and he's not going anywhere, and he just seems to be getting stronger and stronger.
Yeah.
And it's just like, what happened, you know? Like, it's like we're right back to square one with these... So, I don't know. It's kind of crazy. That's why I said, it's like, I mean, just for that alone, this episode touches on some interesting themes. Mm-hmm. So anyway, Omega Red has some interesting... Like, he said, oh, and they also threatened, they said, listen, and you're also going to follow orders because we've implanted a, what is it? They implanted something in him that'll explode, like a freeze bomb. What's that gas?
I can't
gas?
Remember what was in it.
It's like the
right
common
now.
Gas they use in science where they dip a rose in the, I can't believe you can't think of this. A liquid nitrogen.
Liquid
nitrogen bomb they've implanted in.
Oh, right, yeah.
And they say, well, because that's like his number one weakness is the cold, ironically, because he's from Russia.
Yeah. So it'll freeze him again.
If he steps out of line.
Yeah.
But he says, okay, but I want insurance too. I need two, like, my old comrades to work with me. And you're like, oh, who could that be?
Yeah.
But it's Wolverine and Storm, which is kind of bizarre.
And he basically just wants them as hostages.
Right. And for some reason, and like, weirdly, like, you think, like, this military colonel guy is kind of corrupt and weird that he would just somehow kidnap Storm and Wolverine, but I get the implication is because they cut to the X-Mansion, it's almost like they negotiated with Professor X directly,
right?
And the X-Men like know what they're going into and they purposely agree to help.
Yeah.
And Wolverine doesn't like it at all, obviously.
That's more realistic, though, I think.
Well, yeah, I mean, the X-Men are super powerful. They can't just compel, like, they can't, the government, it'd be really tough for the government
to
just say,
well, but also the X-Men have
give us Wolverine
by this
Storm.
Moral standard where once the situation is explained, of course they're going to say, yeah, we're going to do this to help you.
Right, and the X-Men, like we've noticed in recent episodes, they've been extra, like, they've been like this elite crack task force squad going into hot spots in the world and cleaning situations up,
mm-hmm.
more than they've been like fighting for mutant liberation.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They've kind of evolved into like they're just really professional at what they do and stopping bombs and like stopping threats and
right.
things of that nature. So it's kind of funny that they're it's like another one of those missions where it's not really about mutants and about you know, bigotry and stuff. It's just about like they're the best at what they do.
Yeah.
Which is like, you know, fair and another cool aspect of the X-Men. And Wolverine has one of his most hilarious classic lines here, because they know it's a trap. They know they're all being set up by Omega Red somehow. That he's an angle. They're not stupid.
Yeah.
And referring to the military guys, he says, who do these spy guys think they're dealing with? Winnie the Pooh. I mean, it's just, Cal Dodd is Wolverine's amazing. The writing for Wolverine throughout the show has been consistently excellent. I mean, it's really, you know, people talk about Kevin Conroy as Batman, the animated Batman. His voice is like, he's secretly the best Batman if you line him up against the live actors.
Right.
It's like the same thing as, like, Cal Dodd is Wolverine's better than Hugh Jackman was, and I'm sorry, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Hugh Jackman's really good, like, borderline great, but
right.
Cal Dodd's better. It's just a better character.
Hugh Jackman has a lot more to work with, you know?
Like, wait, he has more to work with?
Yeah, and I'm saying it's more impressive how good Cal Dodd is.
Oh. Right, yeah, yeah, like, right, yeah. Because, right, Hugh Jackman's, like, comes to life, and
yeah.
Cal Dodd's just a voice in a booth.
Yeah.
And, but Cal Dodd, it's amazing. It's so good. He's Wolverine forever. I'm sorry. There's no other Wolverine. Like, Marvel, it's actually kind of nice. I really hope that now that Disney controls the X-Men again, they, you know, there'll probably be future animated series and other video games. They gotta, at the very least, bring Cal Dodd back and give him, like, make the fans happy. And I think it's
cameo
something.
Or something.
Just hire him, you know, like, have him voice Wolverine.
For animated things.
Yeah, like, yeah. I mean, just, it doesn't have to, you know, he can't be that much money if they want to bring him back. So, you know, Warner Brothers keeps hiring Kevin Conroy. They keep having him do Batman forever, mm-hmm. and it's awesome. And Mark Hamill is the Joker.
Yeah.
You can bring back Cal Dodd as Wolverine. I'm sure he hasn't lost a step. I'm sure him getting older has only made the character probably sound better.
Yeah.
So Wolverine's not happy. Omega Red... And I don't know why Storm agrees to do this, too, and I'm not sure why Omega Red wants Storm as well. Is that made clear later in the episode?
Isn't it a whole revenge thing because she's the one that froze him?
That's what I thought, but I don't think it's brought up so much, unless I missed it, if it was a quick line of dialogue. But anyway, like, maybe it's because her claustrophobia, he know it'll compromise her. She'll be less...
They don't say it. I just assumed it was because he had, like, he was holding the biggest grudge against Wolverine and Storm from their previous encounter.
Yeah, probably. Oh, definitely.
He's
well,
all
he
about
hates Wolverine.
Grudges and justice.
Right. I mean, Omega Red's like a villain on Sabretooth's level in terms of Wolverine's past. Mm-hmm. They make that point very clear in this episode that, you know, he's killed close friends of Wolverine and Wolverine will never get over it and he knows what a danger he is.
Right.
Anyway, Storm agrees to go on this mission too. They get this cool mini sub.
Like a Steve Zissou type of mini sub, a little yellow one.
Right, yeah. A real futuristic mini sub with some retro charm. And I just want to give a shout out to Storm's earrings, which we don't talk about much in this podcast.
But lightning.
The lightning bolt earrings are awesome. And
she wears those like every episode.
Yeah, they're really there.
Why
all
are you talking
time?
About them right now?
I'm saying we don't talk about them that much. Oh. And they're just a great like character design element. I love the lightning bolt earrings, and I hope that Storm in the MCU has lightning bolt earrings. I think that's an important thing to remember for future incarnations of Storm.
Wolverine and Storm are a really good team-up team as well.
Like, I mean, really, you compare the X-Men up.
It's a mix and match situation.
Yeah, I mean, it's great. I mean, like, later in this episode, you see Beast and Rogue. We've seen them work together before, too, many times. They're really good together. It doesn't matter. Like, Storm and Rogue are great.
They're all friends.
They're all friends.
Except Wolverine and Cyclops, but even so, they work together.
They work together fine. Yeah, they're teammates. I mean, they're all, like, alpha personalities. And even Jubilee is an alpha personality. They're all really just... You know, that's kind of like the thing. It's like with the X-Men, a lot of the mutants in the mutant world are shy and scared and they're oppressed.
Uh-huh.
But the X-Men, it's all about being bold and not
living
caring.
Living out loud.
Living out loud, right? In their bright yellow spandex and crazy colors and like form-fitting outfits. That's what's great about them. You know, like they're really like the most aggressive mutant team. And that's like, it's a personality trait that pervades through the comics universe as well. It's like part of their reputation too. I think Joss Whedon captured that in his run on the X-Men comics that he did with Astonishing X-Men. He talks about how the X-Men are like sort of like the most forceful and most like direct assault team and not afraid. And it's just really the spirit of them. Anyway, so they meet up with Omega Red, or he's captured. They're taking him down to the sub. They're all traveling together. Omega Red, Storm, and Wolverine. And Omega Red makes a really prescient line about Wolverine. He says, "Your body can heal, but not your spirit." And that, like, wow, he really hits the nail on the head.
Yeah.
Like, Omega Red's kind of smart. He's not just a dummy. He's really, you know, he knows his enemies well.
Mm-hmm.
And that, like, line really just sums up the character perfectly in a way. Like, I guess I knew that about the character, but I just when he put it that like, as plainly as that, it
right,
was really...
Right, like, how ironic.
Yeah, I mean, but that's, like, really Wolverine's life struggles. That he's, like, invincible, but, like, his... It's like they show the toll.
He's wounded on another level.
Right, the toll of an invincibility on that person's psyche is insane.
Mm-hmm.
Especially a soldier like Wolverine who, you know, has fought so much in his life. So that was a great line. And then, you know, at this point I was wondering, like, why doesn't the government, and we alluded to before, like, why not just send Wolverine in? Because they say that the ship is flooded with radioactive gas.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, that... Like,
Wolverine doesn't know the codes.
Yeah, that's part, but he could slice his way in. Who knows?
But he might trigger
something.
Explosion.
Yeah, I guess. But the point is, they do address in the episode. I was afraid they wouldn't. Storm says something like, you know, if you attack Omega Red and he rips open our, like, breathing suits. They're wearing, like, astronaut suits. Like, you might survive with your healing ability, but I won't. I'll die.
Yeah.
And I was, like, glad that somebody said that.
Right.
Because, you know...
That's the kind of detail that gets overlooked a lot of
times. Often, yeah. Especially with Wolverine's healing factor in the show, because it's not... They can't really show it that much or make too big of a deal out of it. Because in the movies, his healing factor is, like, the one time they can really show bloody gore.
Yeah.
They can't really show Wolverine have that much gore in the mainstream X-Men movies, Logan excluded.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, for some reason, they can show, like, him bleeding and him getting shot in the head and, like, his body being massacred.
Because it doesn't mean death for him.
Right, yeah, because it heals, it turns back to normal. So I guess the censors are like, oh, it's okay for kids to see him,
like, but in the cartoon, it can't really go there.
Yeah.
So his healing factor is like much more weakened in the cartoon. It's like, it's kind of like how it was when it was like first introduced in the comic, because it wasn't introduced right away.
Mm.
His healing factor is just this thing they mentioned later on. They probably just came up with it later, you know? And like at first it was just like a thing, like he heals fast. It didn't mean that he was like Hugh Jackman in the movies where like he heals instantaneously, like magic. It's like he would get like blown up and he'd have to go in the hospital for a week or two, but he'd be like live.
Right.
And he would live really long as well, but it didn't mean that... you know, his healing factor is a thing they ramped up in the comics, like, much later when they went into the Weapon X Origins.
Mm-hmm.
They would show him get, like, burned and stabbed and shot, and he'd be able to heal himself. Anyway, but despite Storm saying that, like, and that's what stops Wolverine from attacking Omega Red, because Omega Red is antagonizing Wolverine this whole time, and he knows Omega Red's going to betray everybody, like, he can just tell.
Yeah.
Despite all that, like, Storm stops him. He's like, don't attack him, you know, we're vulnerable. Like, 2 seconds later, he attacks him anyway.
Yeah, I know.
He forgets all about Storm.
Yeah.
He's just like,
I'm going for it.
Yeah, he's like, screw it. It's just, like, totally insane. He attacks. He forgets about Storm. I guess he's subdued right away. Omega Red programs the missiles, and he announces what his plan is. He wants to launch... It has 15 missiles. He's going to attack the 15 largest cities on Earth and watch them burn. He doesn't care about anything but revenge against the world,
and then everyone will know how powerful he is and
right yeah
fear him, I guess, is his whole plan. Right,
he talks to Storm about stuff. He's like imagine like being a weapon and never being used properly, how sad that is.
Yeah.
And Storm says, but weapons don't have emotions.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, if only that were true, Storm. and so that's his motivation. It's pretty insane. And you know, what are the 15 largest cities in the world? I wonder if, like, today in 2018, if, like, 10 out of the 15 are Chinese cities that no one in the Western world knows the names of outside of Beijing and Shanghai.
Yeah, right.
And Hong Kong, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
Like, you read these, like, stories about, like, the 15 largest cities by population in the world, you know, like, all these Chinese cities. They're like, oh my god, really?
Yeah.
And then you think, it's like, Pittsburgh is, like, 200th on the list. It's like, most of the American cities outside of New York, LA, and Chicago, like, don't even come on the list.
Yeah, not on the radar.
Right, yeah.
Well, that's what I was going to say before when you were talking about the Cold War.
So it's like, sorry, China.
Like, isn't that the threat that came up next, like, before this, like, stealth Russia thing came on everyone's radar with, like, the current presidential administration or whatever? Everyone was like, oh, better start teaching Chinese in the schools.
Right, yeah. Yeah,
they're up and coming.
Well, I mean, they still are the emerging superpower, the economic force in the world, China.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the world's a big mess right now. But anyway, so it's a pretty insidious and evil plan, and the fact that he just says he just wants to watch the world burn, that's written... He pretty much says that line, and that's written, like, 10 years before The Dark Knight was written by Christopher Nolan, where mm-hmm. that was the line he used... Alfred used to describe Heath Ledger's Joker.
Mm.
So, I mean, X-Men Task, insanely well-written, way ahead of its time. Eric Liewald, another round of applause to you and your team. Great job. And he also says that, like, part of his plan is, like, he wants to see the world crumble to chaos, and then he's going to pick a time to emerge and, like, rebuild it in his own manner from the ashes, you know? Like, he's gonna see when it's just the right time to... I mean, that was kind of his plan when we last saw Omega Red, in a weird way. He wanted to just... He was gonna reconquer the former Soviet Union and reunite Russia and be, like, the dictator. So, you know, his ambition has grown a little bit here.
Mm.
I guess, like, it's kind of interesting. Like, I like the subtle real-world take on it, too. It's like, if you did nuke just 15 of the largest cities in the world, it wouldn't be the outright end of civilization. Like, I don't think it would... I'm not sure if it... I don't think it would necessarily cause nuclear winter.
Doesn't it depend on the size of the nukes?
It does, but I think just, like... Think about it this way. Like, there's been over 1,000 nuclear bombs exploded on or beneath the Earth's surface since 1945 in tests.
Right.
And it's not like, you know, there's been a lot of studies saying, like, oh, the rates of cancer have increased around the world since then. But it's not like it destroyed the Earth's atmosphere or anything.
Mm-hmm.
So my point is, like, 15 nuclear bombs going off simultaneously across the globe, I don't think it would, like, end the world and cause nuclear winter.
Right. Well, that's not his...
Right, but that's what I'm saying. Like, I like his subtle take that's like, it's just going to cause the world to go into total chaos and melt down. Like, it would. It would, like, you know, be total lawless and, like, all of, you know, all the food supply chains and trading shipping chains would break down and governments would, like, devolve into nothing. And there'd be mass, like, riots and poverty and everything. Although, they do, like, there's scary stuff. Like, if you ever watch, like, an episode of Vice, they talk about, like, if India and Pakistan got into a nuclear exchange, they do say that it would cause nuclear winter and end the world.
Because they have so many nukes between them.
I don't even know if it's about so many nukes in between. They said something about the proximity of the, just, like, if you just nuked India and Pakistan, like, it would just cause a nuclear winter and the whole world would probably, like, die in 5 years, you know, after, like, it plunges into freezing chaos and radioactivity. But whatever. A nuclear bombs expert can weigh in on the X-Men Task Podcast Facebook group. So, and, you know, the X-Men, like we said, they're in crack squad mode. So Beast and Rogue with Professor X on Cerebro, they sort of fly out over the Hawaiian waters over there to help.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're, like, dropping depth charges from the Blackbird, and they're disrupting Omega Red. And, you know, it's just interesting to see submarine warfare in a way. It makes me think that, it just really reminds me that, like, why Star Trek is modeled on the Navy and not the Air Force.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense.
Like, it made, like, more sense to me in, like, a real, like, three-dimensional way.
Right.
Because a submarine, like a spaceship, moves through space in three dimensions, mm-hmm. like, kind of slowly, at least relative to the space around it. And you have, like, the people, like, in a sealed, contained environment, you know, surrounded by an an atmosphere that would kill them, the ocean.
Yeah.
Like, instantly if they went outside, in the case of Star Trek Outer Space.
Right.
And you've got the command crew with the captains and the lieutenants and everything, and the way, you know, the politics in a tight, contained space and all that stuff, you know. Like, so it just made sense to me, like, oh, yeah, like... Submarine. It's weird that, like, space exploration and space battle and science fiction is modeled after the Navy, because, or some, at least the submarine aspect of it more than anything.
Yeah.
That was just, like, a weird thought I had. There's, like, some other aspect of it too that made sense to me. I can't quite remember right now. But so, you know, they're doing a pretty good job, like, knocking Omega Red around. He does manage to launch 5 missiles.
Right.
And there's, like... Yeah, go on.
It's weird, because they, like, rise to the surface of the water separately, but then they all, like, wait for each other at the surface of the water, and then they continue into the air. How it would really work?
I don't know. It was done in such a... It was animated in such a deliberate way that, like you said, when the missiles reach the surface of the water, they kind of pause and they boost again.
Yeah.
And I've definitely seen images of missiles, like, launched from, like, submarines and videos and stuff. But my image of it, it's like, it just explodes really fast. Like a small little torpedo or missile explodes really fast from the ocean.
Yeah.
And, like, sparks away. But they're not intercontinental nuclear missiles. I've never seen that. Like, I'm sure there's footage of that, like, test ones.
Right.
Obviously. But I wonder if that's what they have to do. If, like, if you have an ICBM on a submarine, a nuclear submarine, if it, like, has to... It's just, like, a two-stage launch process. Mm-hmm. It rises to the surface, and then, it, like, the
like
rocket...
Like, it needs a different kind of thrust to move through air versus water.
Right, and that kind of makes sense in a weird way.
Medium.
Yeah, so good animation either way. Even if it's fake, it seems convincing.
It looks cool, yeah.
Right. So he launches 5 missiles. Oh, my God. It's like, in my understanding about the way... missile technology is once a missile's launched, there's no fucking way to stop it. But I mean, Beast and Rogue manage to shoot a few of them out of the air.
Yeah.
So I mean, I wonder, like, maybe if, like, you catch a missile right as it launches, you have a realistic shot to shoot it down with a jet. Do you think, like, that's in the realm of possibility?
I have no idea, but, like, the Blackbird is not meant to be like any jet that exists.
Right, yeah.
So.
Which is commented on in this episode. The military can't even track it.
Yeah.
But, like, still, I wonder, though, like, if you catch an ICBM, I bet you could, maybe. If a plane was right over, let's say, North Korea, right, is there launching missiles? Like, I wonder if they could just shoot it out of the sky, really, before it achieves its, like, break orbit velocity, which Beast comments on, too, that they get away really fast. You know, the rate of acceleration is incredible, he says. But Rogue...
It's just, like, a very small target within a very large amount of space. I think that's... and it's moving quickly.
Well, that's the thing why missile hard. Right. Well, that's why missile defense technology is nearly impossible to do because the anti-missile has to launch from a totally different location on Earth and intercept this thing like thousands of miles away, like a pinpoint nothing in the sky, right. You know, like infinite. Oh, it's almost like an infinite like amount of space. It's like weird because you think computers are so precise and accurate mm-hmm. that they'd just be able to like make this happen. Like, how can a guided missile with all the technology we have and artificial intelligence not just be able to find another missile and explode it?
Yeah.
But it's like when you really think about the reality of like how massive the sky is and how immensely large Earth is, and you're talking about missiles that fly into like, I guess, low orbit outer space and before they descend.
Right.
Like it's next to impossible. I mean, because, and like if you've ever been in an airplane before, you know, like,
how vast everything seems.
Yeah, how vast it all seems and how fast you're really traveling. Mm-hmm. And it's just, like, insane to, like, so it's, like, you can't just make a computer, like, overcome all the elements of a planet hurtling through outer space to intercept a tiny, like, speck.
So I'm gonna say chances are against this happening in real life. But Beast and Rogue managed to do it from the Blackbird.
With an assist from the Navy comes just in time. The Navy jets come too and they blow out the ones they can't get.
The last couple, yeah.
And then, like, Rogue does something super heroic and insane.
She's totally nuts.
Yeah, she just says, like, I can't deal with this anymore. And she just hops out of the Blackbird and flies into the ocean.
Blackbird.
What did I say?
Blackboard.
Right, yeah, she hops out of the Blackbird, and, like, into the ocean as fast as she can, flying towards the submarine, which is pretty, like, deep.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, all she does is just rips open a side panel
right.
to disrupt the sub again.
And then she, like, bends one of the outboard, like, the rudders or something.
Yeah.
Something that would be needed for navigation.
Right, and it's enough to knock Storm free of Omega Red's clutches, and Storm is able to just sort of like escape. Oh no, does Rogue then fly in and rescue them? I think maybe, I don't know.
Well, yeah, Storm and Wolverine manage to get into their little yellow
right
pot, like
they slowly get away capsule. Which I wondered why Storm wasn't flying Wolverine in the sub. I don't know if she could do it or not.
Maybe there wasn't enough room or something,
or maybe she needs the outside air to do it. That's always, like, the mystery.
No, because she uses wind to, like...
Oh, yeah.
Push Omega Red back from them.
Right.
Like, blast him away with her wind.
Right.
But, anyway, so, yeah, Rogue, like, takes hold of the yellow submarine with the two of them in it and, like, brings it back up, attaches it to the Blackbird so they can get away.
Right, she attaches it to a crane or something and she rides it up and they escape. Omega Red, he's at the bottom of some trench in the Pacific Ocean, and he was going to launch more missiles, but the sub's, like, fallen more, and the navigation systems failed.
Because of Rogue's meddling.
He threatens to destroy Hawaii. Right, but so he's sort of trapped in the Pacific Ocean. Then they show it, like, sink even further into, like, a deeper trench, and he's not dead. They show his red glowing eyes, but he's, like, pretty much taken care of. He's
gonna lie dormant for a while.
Yeah, it looks like, I guess he doesn't need food or water or anything to live, who knows. But then back at the X-Mansion, Beast mentions that Storm's gonna be okay, recovering from the intense, emotionally traumatic claustrophobia she experienced yet again. But he's worried that, oh, there's my Star Trek communicator going off. He's worried that Wolverine, he's suffering a different kind of PTSD from just dealing with Omega Red again, that he's worried that he's just really going to need extra time to get over this.
Yeah.
Which I thought was, like, very bizarre, like, note they strike at the end there, that Wolverine is, like, just even seeing Omega Red deeply upsets him.
Uh-huh.
Because it's not like...
I mean, he's pretty pissed when he sees Omega Red, but, like...
They don't really fight that much in this episode, and, I mean, it was real stressful. Like, Wolverine, like, the fate of the world held in his balance again, you know?
Yeah.
And he kind of, like, didn't really succeed. You know, Rogue and Beast really saved the day more than anyone.
Storm.
Right, but he's
dragged him out of there.
Yeah,
you know?
But, like, he's dealt with these situations a million times. Like, I don't see why it being Omega Red especially made him so angsty. And he doesn't even seem as angsty as Beast says at the end. He's kind of just muttering to himself. He's like, Omega Red, if you come back, I'll be waiting.
But he's having a moonlit walk by the water.
Yeah.
So there's the angst. But poor Storm really gets her deep claustrophobia dismissed once again.
Yeah.
Professor X is like, yeah, she'll be fine.
Yeah, I think Wolverine's going to be more fine than Storm is the point. So that Beast's analysis of the situation doesn't seem that great. Professor X is just smiling as he hears it because he's a bad therapist. He has no idea what's going on. So that's the end of the episode. A really surprisingly great one.
Thoroughly
again.
Enjoyable, yeah.
Really, like, top-notch, excellent quality. We've not been really let down much in the show. I'm very excited to see what's next. I'm not even going to look forward to see what the next episode is. Just going to be continually surprised.
Go ahead, do your plugs.
Okay, my plugs. Follow me on Twitter, at Willie Simpson. More importantly, join the X-Men Task podcast Facebook group. We'd love to have you there, especially as we wrap up near the end of this season. We'll have some more surprises in store as we keep going forward here. Some more special episodes, some more special guests, some more movie episodes. We'll see how it all unfurls. So join the community and keep talking with us. And also rate and review us on iTunes or wherever you rate and review podcasts. Give us 5 stars. Let people know. Broadcast that signal out that we're out there and we're a fun show, and X-Men fans would probably really enjoy us. Is that
hopefully.
Hopefully. I don't know. It sounded kind of like arrogant of me to say, but I've been having a fun time the past couple of years doing this. So anyway, that's all I have to say. Sonia, any last words on the Cold War, nuclear winter, Omega Red, future Marvel movies?
See you later, Winnie the Pooh.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.